Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 54 and a half. That's right, it is bonus edition post-fight stuff. Come from Zagreb, Croatia. My name is John Morgan. Cold coffee is with me. We've got Simon Head back in the house as well. UFC Fight Night 86, Rockwell Dos Santos is in the books. And gentlemen, let's just say where we're at right now. We're in the lobby of the host hotel, the Sheraton Zagreb. It is a little after 3 o'clock in the morning. It took us a little while to get back from the arena, but we are back. The party is still going on all around us, and rightfully so. This has been a hell of a week of fights, a hell of a night of fights at the Arena Zagreb. Guys, just right off the bat, how much fun was tonight?
Oh, it was outstanding. I mean, we were talking about the events that we go to in new markets, and it's always a little bit hit and miss. You don't quite know what you're going to get. Poland, there was a lot of expectancy going into that one, and it didn't quite deliver what we wanted. I think here it over-delivered. I think the atmosphere from the fans in the arena tonight was outstanding, considering that no Croatian fighters won their bouts
right.
For a start. And sometimes that can really dampen the atmosphere, but the reception that they gave Junior Dos Santos when he entered the arena was as if he was the homecoming hero.
Right.
It was as if Mirko Krokop himself had turned up to fight in the main event. It was fantastic. And as we've said beforehand, it doesn't always have to have those superstar names all the way through the card. The fight's delivered. You know, we had a couple of so-so ones, but we had some exciting finishes
on
that card.
Yeah, not many. There were some really exciting ones. I guess I should first say, all week long, I had a feeling we were building towards something special, because everywhere we went this week, every cab that we got into, every restaurant that we went to, every bar that we went to, people were talking to us about the UFC. They were talking about being excited. And that doesn't always happen. Sometimes we go to new markets, and I feel like I'm trying to explain what the hell I do for a living, and people just look at you funny. Here, all week long, I felt like people were engaging us and wanting to talk about it. And I think that proved that it was going to be a fantastic night. And then they showed up. The support of the locals was crazy. Cold coffee, you were backstage. But, for instance, the Igor Pokryuk fight. I mean, you know, here's a guy that back in the States is just another guy on the roster. And they treated him so well. We saw it at the weigh-ins yesterday. And then we saw it at the fight today. And I think that kind of willed him on, man. It made him turn in something special.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, kudos to the fans. I mean, this was definitely a market where they are educated, or were certainly trying to become educated, which I think bodes well for this area in Europe. But, yeah, the Igor fight was great. I mean, I thought they supported their people great, whether they won or lost, and I thought they were fair. You weren't getting people booing the opposing people when they beat their guys. You
right.
know, they seemed to be very appreciative of the effort that everybody went out there. So that's always fun to go to a place where the fans and even the newcomers respect
sure.
the fighters on, whether they're favorites or not.
Krokop didn't get to fight, of course. Mirko Filipovic has retired. He would have been under suspension anyway. Unfortunate ending to his professional career. I know the UFC, got to think at worst he would have co-headlined this card, if not headline it. And I kind of wish there had been a way for us to see that, because the way they supported their locals tonight, the cheering that they had we gotten a chance to see Krokop, he did get a walk-in. They did put a video montage on screen, and he did get to walk into Wild Boys. We actually had to hear Wild Boys twice tonight.
Which you would have loved. Your favorite walkout
the
song.
The worst walkout song in the history of mixed martial arts, and we had to hear it twice. But it was cool to see him walk in, and the building was electric. He got a standing ovation. That was really, really cool. So I wish we could have seen Krokop fight here, because I think that would have been incredibly memorable. But, I think this was a fun night anyway. Main event, you guys mentioned, Junior Dos Santos defeats Ben Rothwell via decision. One-sided decision. Junior Dos Santos, as you said, Simon, got the hero's treatment, the chance of Cigano all throughout the fight, which is cool. It was almost like he was the local guy. And good Lord, did he turn in an incredible performance. It's funny because you and I were sitting together on Press Row, and you and I had both picked Ben Rothwell going in, but you actually said to me before the fight even started, you know, just based on the walkout and based on how they were looking, you're like, I might be regretting my pick right now. And it did not take long to figure out that this was not the Junior Dos Santos that faced Alistair Overeem. This is championship level Junior Dos Santos.
Absolutely. And, you know, working his boxing at American Top Team, obviously he's got his own boxing coach there, but I believe Michael Mora, former heavyweight world champion boxer, has been working over there as well. And we know Junior's got good hands. We know this. Mentally, he seemed to be in a great place all week. And he said in a post-fight press conference, he felt like he was at home, which is a very nice political thing to say. But he did look so relaxed. But the thing for me that won him that fight wasn't so much his hands, it was his feet.
Yeah.
The way that he was using his footwork, it was the best I think I've seen from Junior. If you watch Junior against Cain Velasquez, he stood in front of him so often and just allowed himself to get beat up. He didn't ever present a stationary target for Ben Rothwell. We knew that Ben needed to get his hands on him. And even though at times Ben was successful at gradually easing him back towards the fence, great ring craft from Junior. As soon as he realised where he was, he just circled away. And Rothwell barely got him in a clinch all night. And
yeah.
It was only single shots or 1-2 combinations that Junior threw. It was all very economical. He fought clearly knowing that he might have to go all five rounds, paced himself well, looked as good in the fifth round as he did in the first, and won the fight as clearly on the scorecards as it's possible to do without scoring some sort of knockdown.
Yeah, the guy was moving around like Dominic Cruz in there. It was just amazing. And going to the body just over and over and over. Man, I don't know. I can't think of a fight, especially from heavyweights, where I've seen a guy go to the body that often. And it was just, you know, that faith that, as you said, Simon, that he was building to something, you know, that he was really implementing the game plan from start to finish. And by the last couple of rounds, you know, love Ben Rothwell, all credit to him, a lot of heart. He was moving forward, but you just knew, I mean, rounds 4 and 5, you're like, there's nothing he can do. There's absolutely nothing he can do. That front kick that deposited him on his tail, that was amazing. Kokofi, what were the comments in the press room? I mean, was everybody as impressed as we were? Because I mean, I know we're always really excited with adrenaline when events are over, but that's literally one of the most complete, fantastic performances I think I've ever seen from a heavyweight.
Yeah, it was definitely very one-sided. And as for the press room, most of the press at that time had snuck out of the room and went into the arena at some area.
Okay.
So it was myself and a couple food staff people and a couple UFC staffers. And
Food staff people impressed?
They humbled. They were talking to themselves, sort of mumbling or whatnot, but they seemed to be into it. They seemed to be very into it.
Food staff people deserve a pat on the back, by the way.
Dude, they were bringing it.
The buffet was on point tonight.
They brought their A game with the
macaroons.
Buffet.
Yeah. The Croatia will always be remembered for the macaroons. Those were fantastic.
But yeah, they were speaking primarily in Croatian, so I had no idea what the heck they were saying. But they seemed to be into it. But for me watching it, after that first round, I mean, it was so heavily – Junior was just in the zone, and in the second round you could see that the effect was already starting to take place. It seemed to me when you were talking about Junior, it seemed like he was pacing himself. I thought Ben seemed like for some reason he was really pacing himself as well, like it's going to be five rounds. I'm not just going to charge in there. It's Junior Dos Santos. You got to watch his hands. But it seemed that he just didn't get that spark to get him to get going. He would get in there. He would have these – bursts of just extreme speed, which really surprised me. When Ben would throw some of his hands, I was like, wow, he's really got some hand speed. But you didn't really see it because he's kind of got that motion where he's spending a lot of time switching stance and kind of moving. And then as the second and third round went on, that movement kind of stopped. Then it just came
very
flat forward. And then for Junior being in the zone and really having his boxing on point was just using that big chest as a target. And by the end of I think it was like the third or fourth round where you could really see visible bruising because there were so many shots taking place in Ben's stomach it's one of those shots. Ben is so damn durable. I mean, let alone the headshots. Most of us would have been done with one of those Junior headshots in the beginning. And he was taking multiple and just shaking it off like it was nothing. I mean, the dude's a stud, and I think his face is made of granite or something because he just wasn't – it didn't look like – it was hurting him. You saw eventually the swelling and whatnot, but he was still just coming, you know. It's like the Terminator. He's got that titanium steel under there or whatever. But, you know, it just seemed after a while, it just like – I just feel that his game plan, whatever he was going on his head, just didn't get kickstarted. I don't know.
Yeah.
Even in the when they were saying the names or whatever, he just felt off.
A little flat.
Something felt off flat at the beginning, and it just carried through the fight.
I completely agree. It's funny because we're praising Junior Dos Santos for pacing himself, and Ben Rothwell, you kind of didn't want to see him pace himself. It's kind of that wild aggression that seems to work for him, and he just didn't have it tonight. Can't say enough about the work that Junior Dos Santos has done in American Top Team. That obviously paid off. I did speak to a couple people in his camp this week who said, you know, kind of pointed to some personal things that he'd been going through as of late that have been cleared up. Some kind of family type stuff, basically, yeah. and some stuff that has really nothing to do with fighting. But it's funny. I mean, sometimes we forget about that. I mean, real world shit can throw off your fighting game. You know what I mean? When you're stressed out, you're worried about stuff, you're dealing with things. And I don't want to just totally write off, you know, his recent performances and say, oh, it was just obviously some personal stuff or whatever. But, you know, if that was it, and these are some people that are close to him and I trust what they're saying, then I think it's fantastic that he's got everything together, because that performance was amazing. That was the guy that is a former UFC champion that can definitely do it again. And, you know, I asked him at the post-fight press conference, you know, will you stay ready for 198 just in case? You know, I don't necessarily think that's the best idea. He was busted up a little bit. He did get caught a couple of times.
He started showing it a little bit by the end.
Yeah, and that's 25 minutes, and, you know, probably nothing will happen, so it's probably better off him to rest. But anything that stands out, I mean, what would you guys like to see? Now, I think the one – I kind of looked at the rankings, and there are a lot – I mean, if you look at our MMA Junkie heavyweight rankings, there are a lot of people booked right now. I think the one that honestly makes the most sense to me is, let's wait about a month, May 8th. Alistair Overeem versus Andre Arlovski in Rotterdam.
That's it.
And I think you put Junior against the winner of that, and maybe it's a number one contender fight. I mean,
if Ben would have got it, I think that would have – if they would have took on the winner, I think it would have definitely been a contender spot. And I think, if anything, you talk about Junior, and Junior definitely looked back in the zone. And I think what helped, too, it's great that he had his head cleared. But I think he gets it really up for some of these fights. Like, Ben is on such a high right now. I think it excited Junior. I think it fired Junior up to want to kind of take out the new up-and-coming guy. You know, he was talking about the other guys. It came up later on about the heavyweights. And he mentioned, oh, I think it's great these guys are coming up. You know, they're bringing a lot of things to sport. And maybe eventually we'll fight. I think that's the kind of stuff that keeps the guys that have been around for a while, gets them excited, gets those juices flowing, that gets them back into that shape and that form that made them champions.
Yep.
So I think he really got excited for this fight, and I think that's why we saw the Junior Dos Santos, because he took Ben Rothwell really seriously. But there was a reason for it, because Rothwell was right there, and Rothwell, if he would have did this, should have got the next shot, or at least,
absolutely,
at worst case, one more shot before he got a title. So I got to thank Junior taking the guy down that was on, what is it, a four-win streak.
Yep.
I'm like, give him another shot. I mean, this is the former champ, for God's sake. Like, you know, I think most former champs, barring some crazy injury or whatever, never truly fall too far from the top. And he showed tonight, if he carries that form, he's still there.
Simon, what do you think? He's just 3-3 in his last six fights, which is a little bit bizarre when you think about it. But, and it's weird, too, because I'm suggesting the winner of Overeem versus Arlovski, he just lost to Overeem not that long ago. But it would seem to make some sense. He does hold victories over both current champion Fabricio Verdum and current number one contender Stipe Miocic. Is it crazy? I mean, would you like to see him in a number one contender fight later? What do you think is next for Junior Dos Santos?
Well, it's an interesting one, because Alistair Overeem seems pretty convinced that he gets a title shot if he wins in Rotterdam. He was pretty clear with that when I spoke with him a couple of weeks ago, and he talked to me very much along the lines of he didn't say it definitively, but the decisiveness of his answers told me that he's been told, you win this, you get a title shot.
Okay.
However, things change in the UFC very quickly. And if Fabricio gets past Stipe and he's still the champion, there is a nice symmetry there. The story goes full circle. There is an argument for slinging Junior in there.
Mm-hmm.
Junior's just beat the best on-form guy in Ben Rothwell. He had the best winning streak, I think, other than perhaps Stipe.
Yep.
But if Fabricio gets past Stipe, you've got a rematch there, and it would be a rematch of both of their UFC debuts, I believe. They both came in at the same time. They fought, I think the fight was in England, and most people thought at the time that Fabricio, Strikeforce veteran, former Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu world champion, was going to take out this young Brazilian guy that no one knew too much about.
Right.
Perhaps a bit one-dimensional. You know, he's got some striking. And Junior just starched him. And that was the beginning of his first run. That we could come back to that again. It's a sellable angle. It's 5 years in the making. It, you know, it was 5 years ago that that happened. So 2011. That could happen now. But there's a world championship on the line. And the roles are kind of reversed a little bit. You know, it's... I think it's a sellable angle. I think it's more sellable than JDS versus Stipe.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's slightly less history to it. So Stipe wins. I think Overeem will be the guy if he can get past Arlovski in Rotterdam. Junior might have to just sit it out a bit and wait for his turn and maybe fight towards the back end of the year. I wouldn't be averse to slinging him straight in if Fabricio wins, though.
It's interesting. If nothing else, he definitely needs to be a guest fighter at UFC 198. It's his home country.
Sure.
They're already loading that thing up. That card is insane, obviously, as we all know. Why would you not have him there as a guest fighter? I think it makes a lot of sense. You have him sitting cage side. You know, not necessarily to have him walk in and do a face-off with the winner or whatever, but just throw that little seed out there. It's a big fight. Let him be there. And like I said, who knows if anything happens. So let's hear from the man himself after an incredible victory, Junior Dos Santos. Incredible night for you, incredible performance. Give us an idea of the feeling. I mean, I had no idea you were such a star here. I mean, they were chanting your name from start to finish. Did you know that was going to happen, and how did it feel?
I didn't know, but when I arrived here, actually I was here like 2 months ago to promote the fight, and was good, but at this time was amazing, you know, people supporting me a lot, and well, I'm very thankful for everything, you know. They made this experience here amazing. And thank God I could finish with I could give them a finish this night, tonight.
The body work was amazing. Did you know coming into the fight you were going to be trying to go to the body as much as you did, or did that just kind of evolve?
Yeah, it's always good to go to the body, you know, because especially when you're fighting a huge guy like him, you know, you can't, like I was saying, you know, you can't collide with those guys, you know. So I used my footwork, you know, and throw some hard jabs and punches. It worked well, and thank God I won.
And just lastly, you said after the fight that you will be champion again. I'm just curious, will you be in Brazil for UFC 198, and will you try to stay in shape just in case anything crazy happens?
Well, you never know, you know. Actually, normally after a fight, I take 10 or 15 days to rest, and then I get back to my training, you know. So maybe, you never know, you know. But it's going to be a great fight there in Brazil, you know, a great card. Thank you, UFC, for giving us this amazing card, you know, and I'm sure that Brazilian people will love it.
My question is also for Junior. Looking back through your UFC career, how do you evaluate this performance among your other performances inside the octagon? And, you know, where do you rate yourself now compared to where you were when you knocked out Fabricio first time round?
I think I'm doing good now, you know, because it's hard sometimes. You know I have to improve my skills, you know, not just my boxing skills, my wrestling, my jiu-jitsu, but I can't go away from boxing, you know. I have to know jiu-jitsu and wrestling, but I'm a boxing guy, so I have to keep it there. And because where I'm more confident, you know. So I'm feeling good, and I think at this time now everything we are putting everything in the right place, and that's why I'm saying I'm gonna be champion again, and it's not gonna take too long.
Junior, again, just following up from what these guys have said, how many fights or how many wins do you think you are now away from getting that shot?
I'm not sure, but I don't really care about that now. You know, I just want to fight. I was thinking about that too much early in the days, but now I just want to fight. You know, I know it's going to happen at some point. So wherever UFC wants to do or to any opponent they want to give me, I'll be ready for that.
And of course you have wins over Stipe and Vadum. So what's your prediction for the outcome of that fight?
I think, like I said, it's going to be a good fight, you know, Verdun and Miocic. But I see, like I said, I already said that, but I see a little advantage for Miocic, because Verdun doesn't take anybody down, you know. He just submits people and people take him down, you know. And talking about their stand-up skills, Miocic is better. So I see a little advantage for Miocic. But of course, fight's fight. You never know. Verdun is living a great moment. Miocic is living a great moment. So, wow, it's going to be good.
Question for Junior. You said it's going to be a boxing match, your fight tonight. But could you imagine, could you dream that it's going to go, gonna be your way all the match, before the match, of course?
Well, like I used to say, fight's fight. You never know what's going to happen, right? I had my strategy. And like I said, you know, he's too big to collide, just collide against him, you know, and try to do that dirty fight, I don't know. But yeah, I'm a boxing guy. I like to move a lot and throw some hard punches. So that was my strategy, you know, to move a lot, take advantage of the whole octagon. And I think everything went very well, you know. Ben Rothel is a beast, like you say he is, you know. He's very, very tough. Hits hard, and he was walking as he normally does actually. He walks forward all the time, and he was putting some pressure. So I had to move a lot, and my strategy worked very well.
Junior, sorry. Except this tonight's experience, what was the best experience about your Croatian experience in these days?
Well, what am I have to say? That is, well, many, many things, man. Even when I arrived here, you know, people came to talk with me, and they were very kind with me all the time. And then I went to some restaurants as a heavyweight. I eat very well. And they treat me even better because they brought me a lot of food, really good food. And I said, wow, this is your comida regional? Yeah, regional specialties. And they said, yeah, it's really good, so bring more. So, everything here was special. I can say that because I was feeling so well everywhere I go. You know, I went to the Catedrala, the cathedral. That was another very good experience. You know, I found some fans over there too, you know, and every part of the city is something, there is something particular in that part, you know, and it's like, how can I explain that? It's like, I can feel like being home. It's like being home, you know. You guys make me feel like that. Even Krokov came to. Yeah, even Krokov came to see me, and I was so happy to see him. You know, he came to see me at the hotel, and I said, "Thank you very much for coming." Because, wow, it's, you know, I'm a big fan of him. You know, and everybody knows at the time we fought, I told everybody that, and now he's coming. You know, to say, I know he did a training session with Ben Rothel. But he told me that, you know, we did some training with Ben Rothel, so yeah. But a really nice guy, and I was glad to see him. And I think people know me very well here because I fought Krokop and because I fought Miocic, both guys from here. So and also because people here, they love MMA. Also, you know, because everybody knows everything about MMA, and you know? They start to talk and. What? I feel like I don't know anything, you know, about the things. So what was really good to be here. Really, really good.
So that was Junior Dos Santos picking up an incredible win in the main event of UFC Fight Night 86. The co-main, of course, guys, Derek the Black Beast Lewis does it again. Gets a first-round knockout of Gabriel Gonzaga. No secret here. The Black Beast has become a good friend of the MMA Roadshow. Just love his personality. Certainly, we have the gentleman's agreement where, as Simon Head so eloquently put it, where I do wear a red shirt during his fights after he so kindly recommended that I do so.
Still see it underneath the blue right
still
there.
Still wearing it underneath the blue right now. He is 3-0 with three knockouts since I started wearing the red shirt. It's become a little bit of a good luck charm for him.
Did he say something in the presser when he sat down? Did he say, oh, man, the shirt or
yeah,
something?
He sat down in the press conference and looked at me. He was like, why you got that shirt on? I'm like,
oh, that's because you're blue
the blue because I had the blue back on. I'm like, I just do it for your fights, man. That's
awesome. I couldn't make out.
On the way past as well. After he won the fight, walked past us on press row, saw the red shirt, stopped, pointed, walked over, grabbed a big handful of the shirt, turned and pointed at me and went like that. Gave me a big
awesome.
Thumbs up.
Yeah,
it was good.
It's fun. I mean, we talk about it all the time, you know, maintaining obviously professionalism, and we're not buddies with these guys. I mean, we don't have social, you know, outings with these people,
right.
And we don't, you know, go meet them for dinner and drinks and stuff. But at the same time, you know, when somebody has that kind of relationship where they're like, "Hey, man, stop wearing that blue shirt; it's bad luck." Right? You know, it's kind of fun to have like a little bit of a good time with them. You know,
I think it keeps it fun, keeps it light, and if anything else, goes to show. I mean, these they're not just bruisers; these guys have wonderful sense of humor mm-hmm. for the most part. I mean, I'm sure there's some that aren't the funniest of people, you know, but Derek is one of those cases where. You know, who doesn't want a guy like that to smile and laugh? I'd rather keep him happy than to certainly piss him off, you know?
If he tells you to wear a red shirt, if he told John to wear a pink skirt, he'd have to wear a pink skirt.
I'd wear a pink skirt.
You'd wear a skirt?
Well, let's talk about wouldn't put that out because next fight, you know what he's going to say.
Oh, man. Well, let's talk about the performance itself. You know, this was classic striker versus grappler. There was no doubt about that. Gabriel Gonzaga, who is having a couple cocktails over there right now. I feel bad for him. He got starched a little bit, but he was doing what he could do, man. He got the fight to the ground and was able to get to Derek's back, but just couldn't get the choke in. He had the hooks in, and it was really interesting because, you know, I don't think Derek's the most technically efficient jiu-jitsu guy, but what he did do was make sure that he kept his arms. Basically, as he posted, he made sure that his shoulders were protecting his neck. And he doesn't have a ton of neck to begin with anyway. So, he kind of kept that thing squeezed up. And Gonzaga was never able to get the arm around. Derek worked back to his feet. And, you know, again, I'm not ready to say he should go compete, at Abu Dhabi or anything like that. But I think Derek showed that, hey, he's at least capable. It's not one of those guys, you know, that's just so one-dimensional that as soon as you get him out of his element, he's done.
No, and it also... He was taken down early. He then had to deal with the adversity of Gonzaga's grappling. And Gonzaga, in terms of heavyweights, you'd probably put him in the top four or five in terms of his grappling ability. Maybe
absolutely.
Maybe even higher than that. You know, maybe in the top two or three. He managed to, as you say, defend himself very efficiently and very well. And also after that, he was avoiding the takedown as well. So, mm-hmm. you know, this is a guy who, so far, people have just seen him going in there and just putting his hands on people and just finishing the fights really quickly. Now we're seeing layers, and we can see that he can defend himself on the mat. He isn't just a one-dimensional slugger. He has got these skills. Perhaps they might be a little more raw than someone like Gonzaga. He's a former world champion, I believe, in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So, you know, obviously he had the edge on the mat, Gonzaga, but Lewis did enough and got the fight to the feet. And as soon as they had the separation, most people knew what was coming next, and when it came, it was pretty decisive.
It's insane. You know, Kenny, it seems like just a... Who the hell is Kenny? Cold coffee. I was talking to the server or something. a couple of weeks ago, we were in Australia, and we were talking about Mark Hunt as the guy, you know, one of the few men in the sport that has that tool that can change a fight at any point in time. And I feel like Derek Lewis is starting to write his name next to Mark Hunt's.
Sure.
Mark Hunt's a legend, of course. I'm not trying to take anything away from him, but... As a guy that literally has power that can change the fight with one flush blow.
Yeah, and even when he was throwing his punches, he's not throwing these just Hail Mary haymakers. Like, that was a precision shot that took him the right, that actually dropped Gabriel against the wall, actually cut through the gloves. I mean, he was throwing it. That was a straight right. I mean, it wasn't like he was throwing a haymaker. When we were talking about the grappling, what got me about Derek was awesome was that he defended the trip for the most part very, very well. There was a couple of times, even when he got up against the cage, made sure to get his underhooks and actually defended himself very, very well. And when he did have Gabriel on his back, there's something about how damn strong Derek is, because you didn't get that feel when you're watching that. I didn't feel danger for him. he just had a nice strong base, almost where it felt like if he would do one of those little, like a bear shaking the rain off or whatever, that he would have shook Gabriel off and eventually got up. And, you know, a guy like that, if he's got good ground defense and good ground game, and then with his top game that he's got, holy shit.
Scary.
It is so scary because his hands were so – when he finally – I mean, every shot that made contact was doing damage. Mm-hmm. Gonzaga literally slowed down after every one of those shots. And then the one first really flush shot that he caught him against the cage is the one that pretty much dropped him.
It's amazing.
That's dangerous.
It's amazing, and I really feel like we're seeing a guy build momentum. I mean, we kind of got to know him a little early, and you know, as a Texan, and you know, somebody that's from New Orleans, which I love New Orleans. I don't know. The very first time we saw him, we were kind of like, we all kind of gravitated to this guy. Like, I like him, but you know, he was fighting on undercards and prelims, and people weren't. But I feel like he's really gaining momentum. Simon, I mean, I know that your job is to mainly cover, you know, the English fighters, of course, more than anything else, but I feel like Darryl Lewis, he's not a superstar yet by any stretch of the imagination, but I think what people are seeing is this guy that's so different and fun because he is this incredibly, like, hard puncher and kind of old school throwback fighter. He's, I mean, you know, he gets introduced by Bruce Buffer as a brawler, I believe is the way they put it. But he's got these this levels of humor and personality that are just, they crack me up.
Yeah, and when it comes to heavyweight fights, people want to see knockouts. People want to see good, strong performances, and they want a bad guy. You know, they want to see the baddest man on the planet. You know, the heavyweight champion should be the baddest man on the planet. You know, and you don't want to see guys sort of on the balls of their feet, tippy toeing, and more frosty beverages. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And keep those flowing.
You want your heavyweights to be big, bad, hit hard. And for when they hit people, those people go down, and they go down fast. And Derek Lewis, he's a bit of an old school throwback fighter, but he's got those other skills as well. And very briefly, just going back to the whole grappling thing, one of the biggest keys was he didn't panic. And when you know that you're in a position where the opponent is at his best, it's very easy to go into panic mode, and that's when you make mistakes. Derek didn't panic. He was calm as you like, and he got through it. But people in the UK, I mean, as you say, I cover the British fighters, and we also like to push, obviously, the big superstar fighters as well. Derek fits into that sort of cult hero category, I think, where if you watch him fight once, you think, blimey, that's a bad dude. You watch him fight twice, you think, okay, this guy does this on a regular basis. And anyone who's been following, you know, the UFC in the last 12 to 18 months, when they know Derek Lewis is on a fight card, they're excited because they know they're going to get something spectacular.
Yep.
You mentioned Mark Hunt earlier. I know he wants to fight Roy Nelson, and I think that would be an absolute barn burner of a fight. Could you imagine in 12 months' time, Mark Hunt versus Derek Lewis?
A passing of the torch of the sluggers, perhaps, you know?
My goodness me, yeah, can you imagine that? It would be incredible. But this is such an exciting guy, and I asked a bit of a cheeky question of Junior in the press conference, just to ask him what he made of the likes of Derek, you know, working their way up, because there aren't that many young heavyweight contenders who you look at and you think, yeah, you could break into that top 10, that top 5 over time. Derek potentially could be one of those guys, and it's important for the UFC that they find people like him, they grow his career, they push him to the fore and get his personality out there. We spoke in the week that he's almost a bit of a reluctant hero in some respects. He's not someone who will voluntarily push himself out there. You know, even when you ask him a question at a press conference, he kind of looks at you and, you know, he's very softly spoken and all the rest of it. But he's a funny guy. He's got personality. And when he gets in the octagon, he knocks people senseless. That's what you want from a heavyweight. He fits the blueprint perfectly. And he's the right age.
Yes, he does. And he wants to fight Roy Nelson at UFC 200. It looks like everybody's on board. Roy had said before this fight he wanted to happen. He's saying, again, it's going to happen. Even if it's not 200, maybe they slot it on one of those other cards that
main event of the fight night.
I'd love to see that.
Show, you know?
I think something like that would be fantastic. So I think that fight's going to happen next. And you know what, man? I think that would be a fun fight. You know what I mean? That's the kind of fight that he wants. You know, we don't want to see Derek Lewis trying to stuff takedowns. I mean, it's it's how people are going to fight him. There's no doubt about it. But you know, Roy and Derek, they both like to go in and put on a show, and I think that'd be a fantastic fight. So let's hear it from the Black Beast himself as he tells you about his feelings after another knockout win.
Start with Derek, if we could. Derek, three in a row now. Biggest name, though, probably of your career, obviously a longtime veteran. How do you feel right now, and you know, how does it feel where you are at in the division?
I feel pretty good. I wish I had Bud Light up here instead of Monster. But, yeah, I'm feeling good, happy about the victory. You know, I still got a long way to go. You know, still got room for improvement. And to my coaches, you know, they put me on the right path.
I think people thought, of course, that Gabriel was going to try to get the fight to the ground. He did get it to the ground. He was on your back. What was going through your mindset at that time? Was there any panic? And is maybe your ground game a little bit underrated?
No, whenever he took my back, I was just thinking that his hair just feel like Brillo pad. I got to get this guy off of me. So, you know, did what I did.
I know before this fight you were campaigning for Roy Nelson at UFC 200. Is that still the matchup that you'd like to see next?
Yeah, I believe so. You know, it's a fan-friendly fight. You know, the fans going to love it. And it's going to be a, like, really, really awesome fight for me in my career. And it won't go to the judges either.
And then just for Derek as well, Roy Nelson actually just tweeted saying congratulations to you and saying that he actually, that you will be his next opponent. Have you heard any confirmation of that fight, and what would be your message or reply back to him?
I haven't heard anything yet, but I will get on his ass soon we leave here, though. Twitter rants. Twitter war. Yeah.
Question for Junior. Sitting to your left is a fellow heavyweight who's quite new to the UFC in Derek Lewis there. He's running through the UFC heavyweight division and taking people out. How long do you think it's going to be before the man sitting next to you could potentially be challenging the likes of yourself and the other guys at the very top of that UFC heavyweight division?
This guy's doing very well, you know. That guy, too, is doing very well. So I think the heavyweight division is living a great moment, you know, and I'm glad that young, like new guys are coming, you know, to the division and doing what they are doing. You know, I'm messing with everything, but it's really good, you know. And at some point, I think they will start, you know, get really good results as they did tonight. And at some point, maybe we have to fight against each other, and it's gonna be a pleasure.
UFC 200.
Why not?
Thanks very much, Chaz.
So Derek Lewis, the Black Beast, picks up another win, his third straight knockout victory. The man is on a mission, that's for sure. Simon, you said that you asked a bit of a cheeky question, of course. You were certainly referring to Derek Lewis, but you were also referring to Francis Ngannou as well. That guy looks like the real deal. I know we've seen him just twice now, but I thought his first performance in the UFC might have been a fluke, but you're like, okay, well, we saw that. Let's see it again. The guy I saw in there tonight is not only physically gifted. I mean, the punches that he's throwing are insane. Like, that dude is a huge man,
yeah,
throwing with every ounce of his energy. You talked about Derek Lewis, you know, kind of being a reserve striker. Like, Francis Ngannou was not reserved. Everything he threw was just insane. But what was cool was watching him tonight, I feel like you did seem like, not being overly aggressive, being calm, throwing those massive punches when there was space for them. He flashed some takedown defense as well. I mean, the guy still looks raw. He doesn't look like a completely finished product yet, but he looks like he has all the tools to be a real deal in the heavyweight division.
Absolutely, and I think the key that you mentioned there was the takedown defense. Curtis Blaydes was making his UFC debut, and you know, he's only 5-0, and that was his debut in the UFC. But this is a guy with extensive collegiate wrestling experience. You know, that's his bread and butter. And he was pretty relentless in his pursuit of the takedown during that fight. But Ngannou coped with it very, very well. I figured that once Blaydes got his hands on him, that the fight would go to the floor and we'd see some ground and pound.
Yep.
Ngannou wasn't having any of it, and he showed very, very good takedown defense. He's got wild, powerful striking. And hopefully, as he goes through his career, that will get more refined as he goes. He's got natural power and natural athleticism for sure. He's a big, scary-looking guy as well, you know, which doesn't do you any harm as a heavyweight. From a European perspective, he's coming out of France, and France, they don't allow mixed martial arts at the moment. And to really help get the sport through and to break those barriers down, to be able to have somebody being successful in the UFC would be a real benefit. And Francis Ngannou could be that guy. They match him well. They don't chuck him in too high up too quickly. Grow him gradually. And he could become a little bit of a standard bearer for French MMA in the UFC. Again, everyone likes heavyweights, and he could be a very important piece of the jigsaw for the UFC trying to get into France in the next year or two.
It's interesting. I mean, the guy definitely has all the looks, like you said, you know, big, muscular, like the kind of guy you want to see on a poster. You don't know anything about it, and you're like, that guy looks scary, you know. Yeah. And that's great for the heavyweights. But there just does seem to be so much potential there. I picked against him in this fight because you mentioned Blade's wrestling background. And when you have a guy that's kind of what I thought was a more of a raw striker, then, you know, you certainly kind of think that you almost snatched Cole Coffey's beer. That would have been trouble. Frosty beverage party foul would have been a problem.
Blackballed from the podcast.
It would have been a busted head right there.
But I thought honestly Ngannou was a little bit more raw than he is, and I thought his takedown. I thought ultimately Blades was going to be able to get him to the floor. And think about this, Blades did get it to the floor a couple times and couldn't keep him there.
No,
couldn't keep him there. A seasoned wrestler like that was not able to keep Ngannou on the ground, and I think that's impressive. I'm anxious to learn more. I was talking with Francis's team earlier this week, and of course he speaks French. He did sneak in a little bit of English here and there, so I like to see that. But he speaks largely French, and I haven't had a chance to really interview him yet, but I'm anxious to learn more about him. I'll be honest, I don't know a ton about his background, but apparently like came from literally nothing in the Cameroon. And now is in France, of course, and I'm anxious to hear about his background and what, you know, how he kind of got into the sport. So I'm gonna try to do an interview with him the next week or so, and we'll certainly bring that to the Roadshow and MMA Junkie, because I definitely want to learn more. You talked about just kind of what's been going on over here, the state of Europe right now. Simon, things are looking strong over here, man. After a sellout in London, which was an amazing show, you know, just a little more than a month ago, this was a sellout. It was a hell of a lot of fun. We've got Rotterdam in a month or so. To me, and we talked about it earlier in the week, but you know, I really do feel like this is the strongest the UFC has ever been in Europe. James Elliott is just kind of taking over and just really settling in. But what is it? Why now? Why do you think it seems like everything is coming together right now?
I think the stars are just aligned in terms of probably one of the big things is everything that the UFC does. I know, obviously, we're over here in Europe right now, and we're serving the European market. But you still have to tie it back into the US market. And they've now managed to strike a happy medium there where they can put shows on a Sunday morning in the US, or Sunday lunchtime in the US.
Sure.
And they've found a time slot that works. They've been experimenting with these Sunday shows. And obviously it seems to do quite well for them, and it's a little bit of a novelty, and it obviously works for them. Also, they've got UFC Fight Pass, which has allowed them to make other experimentations with talent, with holding entire events on Fight Pass. Obviously they did it in Vegas in December with the Page and Sage card, which we shouldn't call the Page and Sage card, but it was the Page and Sage card. And then obviously they followed it up with a huge show in London just a few weeks back. But I think the way the UFC is growing across Europe, you know, people are getting switched on. The TV deals are happening, and they're able to back it up with good promotion. It's not just let's do a show here, and it just be a one-off. We go in, we make some noise, and then we leave. Mm-hmm. They're building a business. The thing that they always used to tell me, whether it was Dave Allen or whether it's James. There's over 100 countries in Europe and territories that they could potentially go to.
Yep.
They barely scratch the surface. You think the talent coming out of Eastern Europe, Mehrbek Taisimov, perfect example. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll talk about him in a minute. These guys We talked about how European fighters sometimes struggle when they first go in there with American fighters. And we discussed during one of the breaks between the fights actually today that a lot of it could be down to the wrestling, and sometimes it takes a bit of a...
Absolutely.
You know, that once the guys get across to America and start training, then that thing seems to improve. These guys out this way, Eastern Europe, they've got this wrestling background.
Yeah.
And they're learning their striking. Rather than going to the States, you've got Taisimov, he's got the wrestling background. He's gone the other way. He's gone across to Thailand mm-hmm. to learn his striking.
To get his striking.
And it's working for him. And we're now in a position where European MMA, it's growing and growing and growing. And in a few years' time, we probably see another one or two UFC champions from this part of the world. And once you start getting European champions, the sport will just grow even more.
I agree. We know that we'll be in Rotterdam in May. You and I both talked to James Haley earlier in the week, and he said that third quarter will be Germany. I think the last we talked, Hamburg seems to be the leading candidate. I believe that's probably what you're hearing as well. And then fourth quarter back to the UK. I know that I've heard Belfast as a potential candidate. I think we both heard Glasgow as well as a potential candidate.
I think they're the most likely pair.
Yeah.
One of those two.
So I mean, what's been strong, as James said, five straight sellouts. It looks like there's some more stuff on the horizon. And by the end of this year, this could end up being a really pivotal year for the sport in Europe.
Absolutely. And the way the business model works with the US, the pay-per-view model and the numbered pay-per-view events, I think you're still going to get those big shows are going to be the domain of the United States, maybe Brazil with the odd one in Canada. But in terms of the fight night events in Europe, the UFC roster seems to be getting stronger in depth, whereas before you had the superstar guys and you had a load of new talent coming in. That talent seems to be maturing now, and guys that were being brought in as potential prospects and now developing. Again, going back to the likes of Taisimov, he's a guy now calling for top 10 opposition, and no one's going to sort of look down on that call now. This is a guy who came in, he was highly touted from that part of the world. But it was, how's he going to do against UFC level opposition? The answer so far is pretty good. 4 KOs on the spin, and he's calling for top 10 opposition. He gets in there and starts winning at that level. Not long before you start thinking, okay, we need to put this guy in championship contention. And that's kind of where we are right now. We're not quite there, but we're getting there. And we had Alexander Gustafsson, who was very close. He had a couple of chances, couldn't quite get it done. Michael Bisping's been knocking on the door for I don't know how long. And we've got prospects like Tom Breeze, who I know I've personally pushed quite hard as someone who, from the UK, could be the best chance, you know. So it's one of those where it's going to happen, but it just takes time to mature and the market needs to grow. And just like in the US, it started out style versus style. And it was only once people started cross-training and developing their skills that eventually you started to get that talent moving up to the top. And in Europe, that's happening as well now. And we might be 3-4 years behind generationally, if that makes sense. But I think we're catching up. And it won't be long before European fighters and American fighters are going to be on the level.
I agree. The gap is closing. It was so cool to see how many countries were represented on this card. You know, we saw media traveling in from a ton of different countries to follow their guy. And I thought it was a really cool event from that perspective. Maybe from a U.S. perspective, you know, you looked at the card and said, I've never heard of some of these guys. I mean, I think there were like 8 newcomers, you know, I mean, a lot of people were making their promotional debut, but it ended up being a fun night, and I think it'll be a good night for the region. So let's let our man James Elliott talk about it. Of course, he is the you guys have the longest title. It's so bad. The guy that runs Europe, whoever it is, whether before it was Dave Allen, now it's Elliott, he gets the title of UFC Vice President and General Manager of Europe, Middle East, and Africa. Here he is, James Elliott.
Hi, everyone. Let's get going. So thank you all once again for being here and for your support. It's taken us a long time to get to Croatia, but I think we can all agree that what a fantastic crowd, what a fantastic city. This was the hottest ticket in this city and had been for quite a long time. So we're delighted to finally be here. We'd like to thank our partners, Fight Channel, who did a lot of work to make this event happen and gave us a hell of a lot of support. it's nights like these with the quality that we saw and the caliber of athletes who are up here with me now, and the crowd, which is really going to move European MMA onto the next level here. You know, we're about to tip into mass awareness. The MMA scene is going from strength to strength. This, for those who don't know, is our fifth consecutive sellout in this region when we factor in Rotterdam. I'm claiming that one already. So thanks to all of you, because we can't do it without you. Thanks for your support.
It's a question with James. James, after the Ian Entwistle fight, there seemed to be a bit of controversy with Ian on his way back from the cage saying that his opponent had potentially greased his legs. Just in the back there, was there anything more said about that, and was that looked at all?
No, we ran through our normal procedures. So as you would expect, everyone was checked in the dressing room, then at the prep point, and obviously everybody saw him being checked again in the octagon. Nothing was found to be amiss. So we were happy with that situation.
And for the UFC, what are the plans for Taisumov? Do you have an opponent next for him?
That's something that the matchmakers will look into now. Obviously, he's chalked up another win, so I'm sure they'll be getting around the table and figuring that out quickly.
Thanks.
We said when we came here, if this event was a commercial success, that we would absolutely look at it. It was a commercial success. You know, we sold the arena out. We got great partners over here who did a lot to support and done a lot to help grow MMA across the region. So it's somewhere that we'll definitely look to come back. You can't ignore a place where you sell out 14,000 or 13,000 tickets. So we're excited, and I think it was a great night.
Question to the UFC. Today it was debut in Croatia. Last week you announced two more events in Europe. On cards today, we've got three fighters from Poland. So my question is easy. You've got in your plan next event in Poland. Last year you debuted in Poland, so you've got in your plan that event?
We're going to look to do an event in Germany in Q3, and then we're targeting another event in the UK towards the end of the year. So Poland will probably fall into 2017 when we start looking at our options there, but it's definitely somewhere we want to go back. We had a great experience there last time. Again, we've got some great partners there. It's a hotbed of European MMA, so it's definitely on our agenda to go back.
Thank you.
To the UFC, you said you're planning to come to Germany. Do you know, can you give me any more details about that? Which city, which month?
We will be announcing something relatively soon. So we're just putting the finishing touches together. We know where we're going, but we'll wait for it. We'll keep you in suspense for a little bit longer on that, I'm afraid.
So Mr. James Elliott obviously feeling very confident and happy as his region continues to perform well. First thing I want to say is he mentioned the streak of five straight sellouts, which includes, of course, Rotterdam, which you haven't been there yet. I did hear from a couple different people in the organization that a lot of people in Europe are most proud of this sellout out of all of them. This is a new market. They didn't get to use Krokop like they thought they would, which would have been guaranteed sellout. But, and I don't know how much of this I'm supposed to be talking about, but whatever. But the amount of research and effort that they put into it, the way they use metrics, you know, this card ended up with four straight heavyweight fights on the main card. That was no accident. You know, they did data research and found out from Fight Pass Describer and Google research and all this stuff that, like, the Croatian public, when they use these search terms, they're ending up searching for heavyweights like 70% of the time. So they were like, let's bring as many heavyweights as we can. And of course, you know, they booked a couple locals. Igor Prokryuk, of course, had picked up three wins on the regional circuit. They brought him in. We saw how well he was treated. They brought another local kid in as well. But it was kind of cool to see how the UFC themselves was pretty proud of this sellout because, you know, they felt like, you know, Dublin, no problem. We got that. You know, Glasgow, no problem. We got that. London, it's been so long. We got Michael Bisping. We got that. Here, they weren't so damn sure, and I think they were super proud.
And also, one of the other things with it is Croatia is a late buying market as well, whereas some markets, people will snap up tickets. Look at London. The tickets were sold before we knew who the main event was. Whereas with this, the market, so I understand, is one that people will buy. You know, they'll hold on until the day of the event.
Right.
And they'll turn up and buy on the day. And so obviously when it comes to planning your event and being in a position to make sure that you've maximised your sales, that's always tricky when people are hanging on. And, you know, you don't want to be chucking free tickets around, because if people know there's free tickets knocking around, they're not going to go and buy them. So the fact that they sold this place out And it wasn't a small arena. I think it was 13,500 seats. And that was what they configured it for. That, you know, it could have been more, but that because they wanted to do the big screens, which the UFC like to make sure the fan experience is great, whether you've got a cheap ticket or an expensive ticket, you need those big screens. 13,500 for a debut event when you don't have an A-list superstar name from your country that you can put on the top of the bill. I think that's an outstanding achievement. And what it's not just great for the UFC, but it says a lot about the Croatian fight fans. We spoke earlier about everywhere we've been, and honestly, this is not an exaggeration. Every Uber driver we've had, every bar we've been to, every restaurant that we've been in, even people who have sort of rocked up at the hotel here, everybody we've spoken to, all they've wanted to do is talk about fights. Mm-hmm. It's made the week an absolute blast to be a part of. And sometimes you do turn up at these things and you feel a little bit like an alien's landed, and no one understands what the hell you're doing. And you have to, as you say, you have to explain yourself. Not the case here. These guys get it.
Yeah.
And they've got it for a long time, because you think how long Mirko's been fighting for. And he's a national hero. And I was talking to a guy a Croatian guy in the pub last night, and we were talking about, he said, what do you think of Mirko Krokop? And I explained to him that Mirko was actually the guy that got me into MMA in the first place. I saw him beat Bob Sapp in a K1 fight, and that really switched me on to looking him up and watching him on Pride. I'd already kind of dabbled watching the UFC at the time, but that's when the real love affair with MMA happened for me. And he was so amazed and enthused that this guy from England knew so much about Mirko Krokop. But, you know, Mirko has been going for so long. This is a market that has been ready for a show for a while, but it just had to make sense timing-wise, you know, for the show to actually happen. And it went down a storm. It went down a storm. And I just hope that they come back next year.
I do too.
From a purely selfish personal point of view, I would love to be able to come back next year. It was a great show, great atmosphere, great people. And it's been really good fun. I've thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Yeah, no doubt. We heard James Elliott talking, and I'll ask the Brit here as well, because James Elliott was asked to address the Ian Entwistle issue and whether or not there was any cheating going on there with Alejandro Perez. Ian Entwistle, we talked to him earlier in the week. Great guy, man. He's a huge fan of MMA Junkie, which is awesome. He had the great attitude where he's like, dude, I don't know anything else but fighting. That's all I know. You know, like I know I overtrain, but dude, I don't know how to take myself out. He's. I don't want to say one-dimensional, because it sounds like an insult. It's just that he's so good at one thing, which is the leg locks, that's what he does, you know? And he got very frustrated during the fight and was adamant that there was some cheating going on, that Alejandro Perez had been greasing and had greased his legs. And I'll tell you what, man, Entwistle did not let it go. We saw him. He didn't want to shake Perez's hands. He didn't want to do, you know, he didn't want anything. He was adamant that there was some cheating going on. Kolkov, you were in the back. Did you get to see this? I mean, because it was, I've never seen anything like this in a UFC fight, to be honest with you. It was one of the most unique things I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of harkened to when we watched the World Series, and I've seen Jake Shields complain about something real quick, and they went and checked or whatever. But we did watch, and I was a little thrown off at first. And I'm not one to immediately discount when somebody says something. Maybe there is something going on. But when a ref goes up there and checks it, you got to get back in the game. You got to get that out of your head. And I don't think he ever got that out of his head. The ref took his glove off. I thought that was very, very smart to do that as well. So he felt with his hand, skin-on-skin contact, and didn't do it. The thing is, and I'm not sure if we're going to jump into this too much or whatever, but even in the back when the question came up, Alejandro said how he shaved his legs. They knew that he was coming in and fighting the guy that was all about leg locks, so he shaved his legs.
I hadn't heard that yet.
So he shaved his legs, and so pretty much even when they go out there, so he's probably already, I mean, a guy like me that would sweat regardless, depending on whatever the stress level is.
What?
He might have been sort of amped up and probably had a little bit of a wick of sweat going on. And that's probably why it felt so baby smooth, because he shaved with some good shit and probably lotioned up or whatever.
Sure.
So he had nice, soft, supple skin. But legitimately, no, they knew they were going in for a leg lock guy. And so their thought against that was shave the legs, give less hair traction. This actually
makes
came
sense.
Up
Smart.
Earlier when I think it was on the commentary. They were talking about one of the other fighters where guys, if you have a lot of hair on there, you could actually – it creates friction. It gives
right.
the guys something to grab onto. So their way of combating that was to shave his legs. But when the ref goes in there and does it, you know, it's unfortunate that he kept harping on it because Alejandro says in the back, he's like, I don't cheat. I'm not this guy that's out there trying to cheat. And it's unfortunate that that ultimately led in them not shaking hands and probably carrying a grudge. And he's probably pissed off and thinks that the ref still got it wrong.
Yeah.
But at some point, you gotta let the – you got to believe in the fact that the ref's doing what he's supposed to be doing.
What you said, I think, was so right in the fact that, you know, when once they went to restart, I'm like, Ian's done. You could tell, like, he was so distracted by it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that's the lesson that hopefully he takes out of this. I mean, it's funny because I didn't realize that. I hadn't heard that backstage audio yet, and that makes sense. But it is funny because if you, let's say you use, like, an aftershave that's a lotion aftershave versus, like, a liquid aftershave, you know, I've always heard that, you know, not just like to grease, like you don't necessarily just put Vaseline on yourself, but
yeah.
you can put some lotions in that tend to come back out of your skin
when you
a little
start
bit
breaking a sweat.
When you start to break a sweat.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying that. I don't want to make it sound like I'm trying
no.
to blame Alejandro. I mean, Ian's an MMA junkie guy. Maybe if I knew Alejandro was an MMA junkie guy, I'd have his bet. Nah, but I'm not trying to say that, but it is just an interesting thought. I did have actually somebody hit me on Twitter that was like, and it's kind of funny because, you know, you see, as you said, the referee did the right thing. But this guy, and I'm sorry I don't have the tweet in front of me, but the guy hit me up. He's like, listen, Ian's like a sick leg lock guy. He probably spends every day feeling dudes' legs, as weird as that sounds now that I say it out loud.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? He's got, like, those legs in his hands every single day. If he's freaking out because he's saying it feels wrong, maybe he's got a point. And
again, I don't discount that.
You know
I wonder
I mean?
How many guys.
I'm not trying to throw any shade. But
yeah. I wonder how many guys he trained with said, all right, hey, I'm going to shave my fucking legs and we're going to roll, because you'd be like, hey, why'd you fucking shave your legs?
Yeah, I'd be like, that's kind of weird,
bro.
That's
kind of weird, bro. I'm just gonna say it. He might be like, bro, I'm just trying to help you out training-wise. Just trying to help you out. But you're right. That is a good point. I mean, for somebody that is a leg lock specialist, probably can tell when something is going on. So I'm not discounting. Maybe the ref fucked up. But, you know, even at that point, if the ref makes a decision, you have to move on
exactly.
beyond
you
it.
Gotta,
that's the part.
That's the
tough.
Lesson he's got to take. He didn't do that. It is funny, too, because and Simon, you were in there when we were talking to him. But, you know, I asked Ian, well, I think you were at that time, where I asked Ian, I'm like, listen, you know, the way you lost to Daniel Hooker, you wouldn't let go of the leg lock. And then tonight he won't let go of the leg lock. And I granted, he was kind of in that position, and it was basically half guard at that point anyway. It wasn't really going for the leg lock anymore. But it does beg the question – should you maybe look to transition? You know, I mean, yes, you're a leg lock guy, but, you know, can you use that to move another way to position yourself? But, you know, he's a guy that you cover. Watching things unfold tonight, you know, how did you walk out of there?
It's a very risky strategy if your number one strategy is to attack the legs, because unless you get it locked in, then just by nature of the position that you find yourself in, if you're in there with a guy who's got a good top game, you're in trouble.
Yep.
And obviously there was an issue there, and Ian reacted to it. But they were both on their feet at that point. And Grant Waterman, as Cole Coffey said, did exactly the right thing.
Mm.
And once he did that, he went over, he checked his legs. Bear in mind, he was checked at the prep point and he would have been checked backstage as well. So that's three checks. And at that point, he's really got to put that out of his mind. And he went for the leg locks again. And that's okay. That's not a problem. But there comes a point where if you're getting repeatedly hit and you already know you think in your mind that the guy's slippery, you need a plan B. And it didn't look like he had one. Either that or he didn't want to go to it. And whether it was emotion, whether it was just stubbornness, and it was... You know, imagine he thinks he's greased. He obviously thought he was greased. He might have been thinking, damn it, I'm going to submit this guy with a leg lock anyway, just to prove my flipping point.
Right.
You know, he's greased. I'm going to sub him with a leg lock, and I'm going to stand up there and I'm going to say, he was greased and I beat him anyway. I'm absolutely sure that's probably what was going through his mind after the check. Unfortunately, it's such a high-risk strategy because you do end up in a very, very difficult position if it doesn't go for you. And that's how it turned out in the end. And it was interesting. I don't know if anyone's had a chance to talk to him. I certainly haven't since the fight. It was ruled a verbal submission.
Yeah, I was curious about that as well.
So I don't know what came of that.
Well, in the back, Alejandro actually said he heard him say it a couple times. You could see it on the screen. You could see that he actually was saying something. I don't know if he was... I at first thought he was complaining
again
about something.
Right.
But then I think that was enough. But Alejandro said he heard him say, that's enough, or something along those lines. Like, I'm done, something. I mean, the English barrier was kind of going on in the back. But he said that he had heard it multiple times and was waiting for the ref to kind of...
Interesting.
Come say
I mean, Entwistle definitely didn't object after, so you know, it was bizarre to hear.
Wasn't
verbal
a contested
submission.
Stoppage, was it?
Yeah, no. Yeah. I think at that point he knew. So it was a really an interesting situation. Very, very bizarre. I do like Entwistle. I like his attitude. I mean, it's so crazy to see a guy that just like dives at your legs.
That
like,
was comes really, really bizarre.
Oh, so cool, man.
But
so,
yeah, it's awesome.
He's got to make those mental adjustments. Simon, you mentioned earlier Mirbek Taisimov. As we just kind of wrap up this card, Mirbek. I've been high on Mirbek Taisimov for a while. He's a guy that I've been saying for a while that I think is somebody to watch. And damn it, if he didn't go in there and turn in something else again. His opponent is a lot of fun as well, and I definitely want to see him again. But that uppercut finish from Mirbek Taisimov, well worth the $50,000 bonus he earned. And I'm telling you, if you're not – I've been preaching for a while. I think this is somebody we need to watch. And, man, I think he definitely proved it. That guy is impressive.
He had the whole package. He had the whole package today. He had the good performance. He had the highlight reel finish. And for a guy who is still learning his way when it comes to speaking English, when it was his opportunity to actually do an interview on the microphone, he had it all sorted. He knew exactly what he was going to say. He said, that's four knockouts in a row. How many more people do I have to knock out before I get a top 10 guy?
And then walked off so Anik couldn't ask him a follow-up question. That was awesome, dude. He's like, no, hell no, you're not ruining my shit. I'm out.
Drop the mic.
That's all I know how to say. Because his English is pretty good. But
it's the confidence thing.
He's scared to death. And we talked about it before. I'd be scared to death to give, well, you know, certainly whatever he speaks, I wouldn't have it. But, you know, even Spanish, which, you know, my wife speaks Spanish. I know a little bit of Spanish. I'd be scared to death to do an interview in Spanish. So good for him. He handled the mic well. And, dude, I think he's definitely due for a big fight next.
Absolutely. Al Iaquinta would be a good one. I think Al Iaquinta would be a cracking matchup for him. Al likes to stand and bang.
I ain't hating on that.
Mirbek Taisimov likes to stand and bang. Al is sort of in and around that sort of between. I don't know his exact ranking. He's either lower top 10 or just outside the top 10, maybe 11th or something like that.
Are you talking about the UFC rankings?
I'm talking about the MMA Junkie USA Today.
Oh, okay.
Combined rankings.
All right, I'm about to say.
You know, the only true and correct rankings.
Exactly.
Compiled by industry experts as opposed to random journalists that most of us don't know. Yes, of course. So I think stylistically that would be a really, really good matchup. I think it would be a fun fight. And it would also give them the opportunity, assuming he's got his visa issue sorted out, because he was due to fight in the States and it didn't happen. So hopefully he can get that sorted. And that would be the final barrier out of the way. Get him over.
An Austrian-born Chechenian that trains in Thailand. I have no problem. I don't understand why he can't get into the States.
No. Let him in. Trump would never let him in.
Well said. Well, let me ask you guys, what else stands out to you? I've seen, and just looking over your shoulders, as you guys can see, I've seen Zach Cummings over there celebrating his victory. I thought that was an incredible performance.
Outstanding performance.
Although Nicholas Dalby deserves some credit as well, because that dude never quit, and he was getting dominated from start to finish, and he never quit.
Good fight.
That was fantastic. Jared Cannonier, that was a brutal knockout. Lucas Martins, Robert Whiteford didn't exactly end up like I hoped it would end up. But what else? Any other lasting impressions that you know, whether it be one of those moments or some other moments that you're going to take with you? Cole Coffey, what's going to be your lasting impression of this card? When you leave and we're flying back. Now, Not till Tuesday. We get tomorrow to hang out. This is a rare situation.
That's what I'm taking away from this card, is that we have an extra day to actually explore this lovely, beautiful city. No, if anything, I love the fact that I love that they did the research. I love that it was a card that was heavyweight driven. Mm-hmm. You don't normally see stuff like that. I thought everybody delivered. I thought top to bottom, I thought it was a good card. Just like most of these fight nights happen to do, they deliver better and beyond than anybody expects. And I thought the crowd was just wonderful. For me, you watch enough and go to enough of these events that it's the simple things that get me. I love the fact that we're in a beautiful city, and I love the fact that the crowd love it. I love, like you said, with the Uber drivers. Like, it's funny. I felt like we were in a normal spot that the UFC goes, because there were so many people talking about the UFC and even riding on the Ubers, that rather than having to sit there and kind of explain why we were going to a stadium, who we were there to see.
They were like, what time do weigh-ins start?
They were like, yeah, what time
do weigh-ins start?
And I'm like, that's awesome.
This is a beautiful city. I did an interview with a Croatian journalist tonight. He was like, I wanted to speak like an American being in Zagreb or whatever. And so I did an interview with him. And I actually told him, I was like, listen, this city is gorgeous. Like, I guarantee you most people in America have never even thought once about coming to Zagreb.
Yeah.
Never even thought once.
You really, really should. I mean, for like that.
Gorgeous.
That like Eastern European whatever architecture. I mean, and I don't even pay attention to the graffiti. Unfortunately, it is here, but you kind of get that whole feel of. Of a youth that rebelled at one point, and then that was just them leaving their mark or whatever. But the food's incredible. Our money, it's finally a location that the U.S. dollar does pretty darn well.
Right.
Not as good as Mr. Simon Head's pound here, but we actually could, do pretty well over here. But, what a great, great location. And you're right, it's one of the places that, I kind of jumped at the opportunity to come because it was a new place, something we've never actually been. But
Francis Ngannou getting out of a mini taxi might be the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Did he have to unfold himself?
That was fantastic.
To get out of the back of that car.
A little tiny taxi has pulled up right outside of where we're doing this. And
you Francis don't get Ngannou, that in normal places.
You don't get that.
You don't get that back in America.
Simon Head, anything that happened in the cage or outside the cage, what's going to be your lasting impression, or just a moment maybe we haven't talked about?
The abiding memory for me is the people. Mm. It really is. We are in a beautiful country. You can't help but think back to what's happened in the very relatively short lifespan of Croatia as a country, as an independent country. We're only talking 20, 25 years, really. And they've been through a lot as a people, and they've now got this huge UFC event that they had today. They had Croatia's biggest soccer star flew in especially to be a part of this event. Mario Mandzukic, the Juventus striker, flew in to be part of this event. Mirko Krokop, legend, made sure he was here to be part of this event. But from the minute we've got here all the way through to fight night, the people of Croatia have been absolutely fantastic. And then it was a case of, how good are they going to be on fight night? Are they going to generate the atmosphere that I hoped and thought we might get? And they really did. They really did. And again, the Croatian fighters on the card, unfortunately, they didn't get the success that, of course, the people here would have liked to have seen. It didn't put a dampener on it at all. And we had a fantastic atmosphere. We've had a great week. To be able to just talk fights with people, mm-hmm. It is a real joy to be able to do that. And we spoke the other day about talking about soccer, and it's like the universal language of football, people right. call it. It's the same with fighting, and the public have been fantastic. It's been great fun. We've had some great fights. Probably the abiding memory fights wise is Derek Lewis for me. Mm. I think
he made some new friends this week.
We're seeing the birth of a star. It's remember when Conor McGregor hit the scene, it was like one win and bang, there he was. This is a bit more of a slow burn. It's people are watching him going, this guy looks a bit dangerous. Next time, this guy is quite dangerous. Next time, this guy's going to be a contender. And we're at that stage now. If he fights Roy Nelson next and he does to Roy Nelson what he's done to all his other opponents, people are going to be talking about him as a championship contender, and rightfully so. And so for me, I think his performance was the one that really stood out as an individual. But as I say, the people of Croatia, for me, were the abiding memory of this trip.
Well, what the people of Croatia need to do is they need to go to the iTunes store. Who's behind me? Look at this. This is Derek Lewis right here.
We were just talking about you.
How you feeling, man? That was a big one for you.
Feeling horrible, man. You know, see what y'all talking about over here. Feeling horrible.
My man Simon just said that this might be the birth of a star. That it's been a little bit of a slow build. Yeah, please grab a seat. But that this might have been the moment where people around the world are saying, this guy is not only is he fun, is he incredible, but he's going to be a championship level contender. And if this Roy Nelson fight comes together and you win that fight, that people are going to be saying, this man is a legitimate contender for the championship belt.
I don't think they'll go that far, but it's still going to be the haters, but I don't know. We're just going to have to see, you know, but I'm always feel like I'm ready for the title.
So. I've got
you jumped up on the fence. You jumped up on the fence and made the belt. Like it's been fun because I feel like in the beginning you're kind of quiet, reserved, but I feel like we're seeing you come into your own, and now you're realizing I'm going to ask for what I want, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah, because this sport really turned into alcoholic, so I'm more outspoken now.
Derek, I got to ask, how high is your vertical? Because you leaped up to the top of the fence, I think, in a split second.
Well, it's pretty high. Probably like 36 or something like that.
Are you serious? Yeah. That's high as shit.
He's the most athletic guy I've ever trained. Derek is the most athletic guy I've ever trained. I mean, ungodly power, ungodly speed for a man his size.
Derek, I've got a question for you. We were in one of the media rooms during fight week, and you were having a bit of a laugh and a joke with us. And one of the things you said is when you took this fight, you didn't realize it was in Croatia.
Yes.
And you were kind of, I don't know whether it was tongue-in-cheek or absolutely legit, but you said, I kind of regret the fact I've had to make the trip. Now you've been here, and you've had a week here, and you had the win. Do you regret making the trip now?
I still regret it, you know what I'm saying? I'm thinking, oh my God, they not let me check in because it's passport problems, so I can't even check in your first class right now. So I'm like hopefully praying to God that I don't get the, what's they call that, coach?
The regular seats,
because it's going to be hard on my knees.
I like that they got you first class, though.
No, they didn't get me first. I had to upgrade.
Oh, son of a bitch. But UFC, if you're listening to this, get this man some first class seats.
Yeah, you son of a – yeah.
But I got to know, was that actually true that you didn't know, or were you just having fun with us? Were you joking?
I didn't know where the fight was. Whenever I'm, like, trying to call a guy, I don't want to fight someone, I don't look at what state or country is at. So I was ready to fight whoever.
You talked about you want to be on UFC 200.
Yeah.
With Roy Nelson. That's obviously an option. What if they said to you, how about we make you a headliner and you headline the first of those three shows, you get that extra spotlight of being the very top guys on the card, you get that extra shine. I mean, how would you feel about headlining that Thursday night show?
I think it would be good, but the only thing that I liked about being out here in Croatia, it was 7 hours ahead of United States, and like waiting in the back for like say about a few hours at the normal time in the United States, that's a long ass time. And my body like, man, can't wait to get this over with. So it was morning time for me still, and I wasn't as tired like I used to be before I step out into the octagon.
Because you said before, you'd be fine fighting on the prelims. You're okay, you're okay with fighting the prelims.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Just get it done and be over
with. Yeah. It still felt like it was morning time. I ain't even getting – I went to sleep 6 o'clock this morning.
Damn. Wow,
slept,
that's crazy.
Tried to sleep
first
all
ever
over.
UFC heavyweight title fight on Fight Pass.
Yeah, give it to me. Yeah,
Fight Pass prelim.
Eric Winter, are you listening?
Yeah. We'll sell tickets.
I bet you would. Well, you had joked earlier about, you know, the food was a little bit different. You couldn't find your Popeyes went out. So, like, but what have – and I bet the coach could weigh in this. But what have you eaten when you've been around? Is there something that you found that you were like, all right, this is kind of unique? Or did you just find something that was somewhat similar to the diet that you ate back home?
What have I eaten or what I tried to eat?
Yeah, well, I guess what did you try and what did you settle on?
What was that?
Lettuce.
Yeah, I tried lettuce for the first time. Yeah.
What
What is this green
shit? Yeah, I tried that.
Rabbit food. You don't want that rabbit food.
Actually, really, I tried the chef salad just about every day.
That's
the only thing I could really eat. Everything else was like, what in the hell is this? Even the cheesecake was horrible.
Really?
But, hey, I love y'all, Croatia. Appreciate y'all. Thanks for having me out.
You didn't have any of the pizzas around or try any of the pizzas? They're
I didn't
a little
even
different.
Know they had pizza.
There's some the pizza, but it kind of reminds me of some of the pizza in Italy and other ones. Which yeah. It's not like it is in the States. They eat it with a fork and a knife because it's kind of not soupier. It's weird.
It's because
we're
refined over in this part of the world.
I'm starving right now.
Tell me what you've been talking about at the bar.
I'm hungry.
What do you
man.
Want? What did you say?
That lady was trying to throw the muffins away a few minutes ago. She gave me the muffins. I said, you can't throw them away.
Oh, yeah.
She gave it to me, so I appreciate it. But I'm hungry right now. I wish I had some Jack in the Box right now.
You know,
some hangover hours.
You know, the burger from the hotel's not that bad. It's all right. You had one? You tried it?
Yeah, I had it.
It's different.
The french fries are horrible.
I must have been drunk last night. I thought they were all right.
Derek appreciates the people of Croatia, just not the food. So
yeah, the food. No wonder it's no fat people around here.
Yeah, we stand out.
Everybody wearing skinny jeans, so the food is, I believe, the problem.
Yeah, yeah. What about the buildings, though, and a lot of the history? I mean, it's going to be kind of neat, even though they, unfortunately, have tagged everywhere. But it's got to be a little neat and a little different to go somewhere and fight week and see that sort of thing out and about.
I'm from the ghetto, so, you know, seeing all these buildings all tagged up like that, so it's just like you're in the ghetto right now.
Yeah, so you were at home this whole trip,
yeah,
besides the food.
My childhood. Yeah, I mean, living through my childhood again. Yeah. And I don't got no fried chicken right now, so, yeah.
I love it.
I'm thinking that once we know that Derek's not in camp for a little while, a little roadshow appearance with a couple of frosty beverages might do all right. I'm getting that feeling.
I think that would be.
I'm getting that feeling.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure you haven't drunk that before. What is that?
I have no idea. I literally just told him, like, give me 12 of any beers you have left, and that's what we did.
Man. I need some American Bud Light Budweiser.
Oh. It actually probably doesn't taste too much outside of that, maybe.
I had, I think, a tall glass of that one, the green one.
The
Star Primate.
Star, yes.
Yeah, that's from the Czech Republic.
Yes, yeah, not even from here.
No.
It's from a whole nother country.
Maybe we should go try to track down a few more.
We should probably do that.
You staying up, Derek? You going to bed? What are you doing?
Man, we got to catch a flight in, an hour and a half?
Are you leaving in an hour and a half?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Well, that explains why you're still out and about. See, we got another day here, so we kicking it.
Oh, sorry to hear that, man.
Weird to say that grading with me.
Hey, I promise you, what was going through my head during this fight, I said, okay, hurry up and get this over with, and I'm going home tomorrow. That's all I was thinking about. I'll be home tomorrow. The fight going to be over with a few hours and catch this flight, go home tomorrow. I'm already ready to go home. I've been ready to go home the last 2 days.
What's the first thing you're going to eat when you get back?
I don't know if you can say this on radio, but that vagina.
What's the first meal you're going to have when you get back?
I don't know. Probably some Jack in the Box.
Solid
we'll
choice.
See. You got about $50,000 extra dollars.
Yeah, I was going to say, what you going to use with that bonus?
Hey, don't be looking at me like that, man. They didn't give me the check yet, so, you know, I can't pay y'all tab. You
That was the plan. All right, man. We'll let you go pack up. We were just about to wrap up anyway, so it was awesome that you would come and sit
Thank
down.
Thank you so very much.
Sit down for a few minutes, man. You know that you have become one of our absolute favorite fighters in the UFC, man.
We appreciate it.
We love not only the way you fight, but obviously your personality as well, man, dude. It's been a pleasure to watch you rise up the ranks, and we're looking forward to seeing how far you can take it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Got it, brother. Derek Lewis, the Black Bees, with a surprise appearance. That is what's up. That is a hell of a way to end things. Listen, next week the UFC will be in Florida. Me and Cole Coffee will not be there. We're going to take the week off. Matt Erickson and Steve Morocco are going to handle that. We'll be back in the office for UFC 197. And, of course, a lot of big events coming up on the horizon. It's been a hell of a week in Croatia. We didn't get no damn iTunes reviews from the Croatian people. They needn't do that. That's what's up. And what I would definitely say is, if you want to hear about the people and the fun that we had this week in Croatia, just stick around. The music will play just for a second. Stick around just for a minute, and you might hear a little bit of fun and games in the that we had in the bar a couple of nights ago. in Croatia, which has been a pleasure. So more than anything, obviously, as we always say, thanks for listening.
But what got me after that, before that, was the 100 countries. Like, are there 100 countries in
Europe? They have 140 in their region.
Yeah. Because it's Middle East and Africa as well.
So okay. But I thought you were saying, but how you made it sound, it was like, there's like 100 countries in Europe. I was like, really?
I was talking in my own.
I was like, okay. I was like, I obviously have no fucking geographic skills.
I was actually just laughing because he burped in the microphone and I could hear it.
I did burp in the microphone.
That's the only reason I was laughing. I'm way less mature. Did you see my tweet tonight with the Johnson fight?
Uh-uh. Oh, yeah.
I got a lot of hate. Even Claire hated on me.
She walked past him with an inappropriate tweet and then just carried on walking.
What did you tweet?
Timothy Johnson. During that fight, I tweeted...
Hang on, I'll tell you exactly what...
I think I remember, I said, even covered in blood, this Johnson is rock solid seeking the finish.
Oh, jeez. Speaking of, he just walked in the house
Johnson
just
a
second ago. Yeah.
With that incredible mustache?
That's what I noticed first, was I was like, who's this giant dude with the mustache coming? And I saw he had a bandage under his eye. I was like, oh, shit, that's Timothy Johnson. That stash is all strong. Right.
So this will be the last segment here. Got a couple different topics, kind of, you know, float it. So this will be the last one. Cool?
Yep.
Donald Trump is the best president candidate of the Republican Party of the United States.
Why?
Because he hates illegal, let me point that, illegal immigrants. Not legal, but illegal immigrants. That's why. That's why I love Donald Trump, because he hates illegal immigrants.
He came over to the States and had a long time to get in, so he's very upset that some people can just cross the border.
Record that once again.
Yes. His big beef is that it took quite a process for him to get a visa to come to the States. So the fact that some people can just come across the border illegally, he does not like.
That's my dude. Come on, dude. I love you, man. Because I hate illegal immigrants. It took me 2 months to get the American visa. And that's why I hate illegal immigrants that just run across the border or whatever.
Yeah.
I hate illegal immigrants.
Now, I gotta say, like, a lot of countries hate Americans.
No.
We don't hate Americans.
No. We don't hate Americans.
Croatia as a whole doesn't hate Americans?
No. We don't hate Americans. America has helped a lot. For Croatia, for Croatia's independence, Croatia, America has helped a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bill Clinton has helped a lot for us. That's why we love America.
Wait. Bill Clinton helped a lot.
Yes.
So
yes.
Why would you support Hillary Clinton?
Because she's a fucking liberal. She loves.
I want to know who she wants to vote for as well.
Who do you want to vote for? Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? Say Donald Trump.
Why?
Donald Trump is the right answer.
He's ugly.
No, he's not. He's a Republican. We hate.
I don't care. I have my drink.
We hate the Democrats. We hate Barack Obama. We want Donald Trump again. We want Donald Trump. We hate Barack Obama.
Okay.
Yebi say, fuck you. Yebi say, fuck you.
All right, now yours.
Ti si lijepa, kaj piješ, hoćeš se jebat.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
You're pretty, what do you want to drink, want to fuck?
I said her phrases were awesome.
Yebi say, fuck you, man. Come on, fuck
that. That is literally the only thing you need to know.
Right?
I agree.
You're welcome.
Last but not,
imaš dečka. Do you have a boyfriend? That's important.
Is it important?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Imaš dečka, hoćeš
se jebati. Yeah, say fuck you. Fuck you, man. I love the States, man. Come on, dude.
Ha!
Moral Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.